Today's podcast is brought to you by Howie's new book, Paperboy. To order today, go to HowieCarshow.com and click on store.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
We got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice, Grace Curley.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald and the Spectator.
Especially Grace. Grace, stand up.
Here's the millennial with the mic, Grace Curley.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. The number is 844-500-4242. John Kirby getting extremely testy with Peter Ducey. And you know what? For a long time, I wasn't sure who was the best out of this administration as far as being part of the cleanup crew, because they're all always trying to clean up after each other. Karine Jean-Pierre cleans up for Joe. John Kirby cleans up for Karine Jean-Pierre. Jake Sullivan cleans up for John Kirby. And then eventually it gets to a point where, you know, we've moved on to the next disaster. Well, I would say that Kirby isn't as bad as KJP. I can officially make that assessment. However, he's extremely smarmy and sarcastic, and he's getting a little too cute for my liking with answering these questions. Like, he's so much smarter than the rest of us, and we should all be so grateful of the success of the fact that Iran launched this massive attack and Israel managed to thwart it, at least like 99% of the missile strike. But he's getting a little too smarmy for my liking. And you know what else he does that I don't like? He does this forced earnestness where he says things like, "Oh, shucks," or I'll tell you right now, it's a heck of a lot better than the previous administration. Something about heck, Emma, it makes my skin crawl a little bit. Like, I just don't believe that people are actually using that word in private.
Like, gee willikers, I didn't know Biden was up to this.
Or, oh gosh, Peter. Oh gosh, that's too much. And he does that a lot. So take a listen to this back and forth. Peter Ducey's bringing up the fact that Joe Biden's don't policy, that's his foreign policy strategy, is telling people don't. I really prefer you better cut it out. You better cut it out. Or, and we could do this as a poll question, what is the better foreign policy strategy? Don't, that's option one. Don't is option two. Cut it out, a la Full House, option three. Option four would be, I'm going to give you to the count of three, and then I'm going to turn this car around.
Do two don'ts equal a do?
Like the double negative. It's a good question, Emma. And I don't. No, if you catch my drift. But you know what I was thinking of? I was trying to think of what Biden's foreign policy reminds me of, and then it dawned on me. There's an episode of The Office where Jan Levinson Gould gets pregnant. She uses a sperm donor, and she gets pregnant. And this is months after she's broken up with Michael Scott. And he runs into her at the grocery store, and he looks at her, and he says, he sees her belly, assumes that she cheated on him. And he looks at her and he says, "You cheated on me when I specifically asked you not to." That to me is the Biden administration's foreign policy strategy. It's like, you launched these drone strikes after we specifically reprimanded and warned you not to? They have no idea what they're dealing with. Their response to everything is, "Oh, well, you know, you can launch a strike, but your reputation's going to take a hit, and we're not going to be mad at you, but we're going to be, well, gosh darn it, we're going to be disappointed. Oh, heck, we're going to be upset." And so take a listen to Kirby and Ducey. This is cut four.
John, has President Biden considered maybe beefing up the public Iran posture to be more than just one word?
You're referring to don't.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about...
And they did it anyway.
And let's talk about what we did, Peter. Let's talk about don't and did. Let's talk about Saturday night.
Pause it there for a sec. I'm getting fake tough guy energy. I have real good antennas for that. He's almost there. Let's go there. I'm almost getting Chris Cuomo. Let's get after it. We're borderline Donnie Deutsch here. And let me assure John Kirby and the rest of the people in the Biden administration, you are in no position. Like, I almost wish, John, why couldn't we take the energy, the tough guy energy you have towards Fox News' Peter Doocy? Why don't we channel that to, I don't know, the terrorist regime in Iran? Why don't we channel that to any of these foreign adversaries that aren't taking any of your instructions or your directions to heart? Why don't you save this tough guy bravado persona for Peter Doocy? Again, let's just take that anger. Let's take that beating of the chest. And let's redirect it. Continue.
And did. Let's talk about Saturday night. He made it clear that he didn't want to see escalation in the region. Let me finish. He added military resources to the region right after October 7th. And then when we had an inkling that this kind of thing was coming, he added even more military resources to the region. More destroyers that were capable of shooting down ballistic missiles, a fighter squadron that was able to shoot down drones. And that's what we did. So you can talk about the don't word all you want, but let's talk about what did happen. And what did happen was Iran utterly failed. And if I'm sitting in Tehran right now, I'm betting that President Biden takes it pretty seriously when he says don't escalate. He's going to act to make sure that you can. And they didn't. Yes, they fired an unprecedented amount of munitions, but how much?
You know, it's amazing because he thinks that in Tehran, and this is a common narrative that's being pushed by this White House, that everyone in Iran is very embarrassed by this. And, you know, it was such a failure and they're embarrassed. And this is a big win for Joe Biden. And Joe Biden's telling Bibi Netanyahu, take the win, Bibi. You know, don't reciprocate. Don't escalate this. Don't respond, period. Just be happy it didn't work this time. And David Harsanyi had a great line in his latest latest column. He said, if somebody shoots at you and misses, it doesn't mean they weren't trying to kill you. I think personally that Israel should respond. And listen, I don't want World War III either, but I think they should respond and they should act as though each of those missiles did land. That was the goal. And yesterday, Kirby, when asked about that response from Biden, when asked about if Biden said to Bibi Netanyahu, take the win, he said something along the lines of he thinks Israel should just enjoy the success of this weekend. Like, they should enjoy the success of having blocked all of these missiles coming towards their civilians. Now, again, do you think in any world that if we had missiles coming towards the United States of America with the goal of, and keep in mind, Israel's a lot smaller than America, okay? So it's a lot easier to take out more civilians in Israel than it would be here just because we're so spread out. But do you think if there was an attack that was even half the size of what Iran did over the weekend, that we would be taking the win because it didn't land here or that it wasn't successful? No. And let me just read just a couple of lines from Harsanyi, because I really don't think there's anyone better on this. And I think that this is a narrative that is really reserved for Israel. They're held to these insane standards that no other country is held to. Let me just read you a couple lines here. It says, Biden immediately reversed those gains, reverting to Obama-era Iranian boosterism. He talks about Obama. He talks about the sanctions, the sanction relief. He talks about the billions of dollars we've given to Iran, even though John Kirby assures me that it's only being used for humanitarian aid. Gosh darn it, let me tell you that he would bet his bottom dollar that Iran is only using it for humanitarian aid. Believe him. He said, let's also remember that one of Biden's first foreign policy decisions was to overturn Trump-era policy by releasing millions to Gaza that would be sifted off by Hamas, releasing funding to Hamas-allied UNRWA, and removing the Iranian-backed Houthis from the terror list. And then he gets to this line, just because you shoot at someone and miss doesn't mean you're not trying to kill them. Yet Israel is apparently the only nation on earth that is permitted to fully defend itself only if its enemies succeed. Think about that. They're permitted to defend themselves only when their enemies succeed. And even then, what I would add in is even then when their enemies do succeed, October 7th as an example, it's a very short window of about 15 seconds in which people start criticizing their defense, start talking about proportion and perspective and ceasefires and calls for peace. So yeah, they're permitted to defend themselves when their enemies succeed for about 42 seconds until public perception shifts. Then again, virtually every conflict against Israel unfurls the same way. Its enemies threaten or attack the country, Israel responds and heads for a victory. Only then does the world demand restraint. Those, for instance, who contend that Israel started the conflict when it hit a diplomatic mission in Syria last week are engaged in restarting the historical clock when it suits them. Now it is something of a cliche to contend that Israel must be right 100% of the time, while its enemies only need to be right once. It also happens to be true. The lo-fi Hamas attack last year was a devastating failure for the Jewish state and its leadership. Israel, a country the size of New Jersey with a dense population area, relies on deterrence and preemption. Democrats blame their strawman Bibi Netanyahu. The New York Times' Tom Friedman, perhaps the wrongest person to ever tread on this planet, theorized that the prime minister wanted a war to shore up his own crumbling political base. Harsanyi writes, "We have no idea what Israel will do. Maybe caution is the best policy. The notion that the Jewish state simply lashes out in revenge and doesn't rationally consider all of its options is preposterous. Whatever happens, it should be Israel's terms, not Iran's." And so, yeah, you know, Kirby wants to take a victory lap. The low bar these people have for when they'll take a victory lap is really stunning. Like, if Joe Biden had had any of the successes that Trump had had during his presidency, holy God, there'd be parades. It would be like Disney every day here. People would be celebrating Nobel Peace Prizes. And instead, the only things they can come out and take a victory lap for are, you know, Iran launched this massive missile attack, but they didn't land any of them. So we should just enjoy this success. That's their bar. It's something to be, oh, we just canceled all the student loan debt. We've just transferred it to taxpayers. Another one of our huge successes. Oh, inflation has dropped from where it was. Oh, it's dropped significantly. And then they don't actually fill you in on the fact that it only rose after Joe Biden came into office. It's like they really are running low on things to brag about if this is something on their list. 844-500-4242. When we come back, speaking of these federal agencies, there's a weird story. And we get these stories all the time about teachers having inappropriate relationships with students. But this one's especially strange because the spouse of this teacher has a very, very important job with the Department of Defense. I'll fill you guys in on that when we return. In the meantime, listen up. You've waded through the cold temps in February and the rainy weather in March. Now the longer, warmer days are finally on their way. Today's a perfect example. People are enjoying the outside. It's a little bit warmer out. It's definitely, there's a lot of sun out there. Spring means more flowers and sunshine. Unfortunately, it can also mean more pollen and allergens. Finally, you're looking forward to opening your windows to let that fresh air in your home or in your car, but you don't want the sneezing to start. Luckily, the Eden Pure Thunderstorm is here to eliminate any pollutants or allergens floating around in the air. And with the 3-pack special, you don't have to move your thunderstorm from spot to spot. You can put one in your house, one in your car, one in your office. Go to EdenPureDeals.com, use code GRACE and the number 3 to get the 3-pack special. Again, that's EdenPureDeals.com. Don't forget to use the code GRACE3. That's EdenPureDeals.com. Say hello to spring and goodbye to allergens. Don't forget to use the code GRACE and the number 3. We'll be right back.
Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curly. This is The Grace Curly Show.
Soon, the House will be sending Mayorkas' impeachment to the Senate. This hasn't been getting a lot of attention. We played some cuts from Senator John Kennedy when he was questioning Mayorkas, and I don't know. The thing I always go back to is I don't know who's worse when it comes to getting questioned, Mayorkas or Merrick Garland. They're both very similar. I've never seen them in the same room. They're both incredibly weak and incredibly feckless, even by Biden administration standards. But the House is sending Mayorkas' impeachment to the Senate. We'll keep you posted on that. And I was just talking with Toby. He's coming in soon. And he mentioned to me that all of these protests, like the ones on the Golden Gate Bridge, the Brooklyn Bridge, they were all pre-planned. And Emma, you said you check out these websites quite a bit and you always forget, you know, it's hard. I don't know if maybe you could get notifications for what they're doing, but you went on the website recently.
Yeah, so after my first go with the Extinction Rebellion group in Boston here one time, occasionally I'll go on the site and see where they're blocking traffic, what kind of demonstration they're having that day. But it looks like they're going to have a week of rest. So very important for them. Their spring week of rest is coming up.
Oh, week of rest, not unrest.
No, just rest.
You want to be careful about that. You know, that's something that you really got to put in bold. Because
that was this week.
If the people get an email, get confused, they think week of unrest, they'll go crazy. So the Extinction Rebellion, see, this is where I get a little lost. And maybe now the groups have all kind of converged into one thing, Emma. But when you were covering the Extinction Rebellion, that was when they were slashing the tires near Beacon Hill, right?
What do you call the dragons? What are they?
Dungeons and Dragons.
Sleeping Dragons, where they all get in these big cinder. I'll
like
show
dress
you.
Dress up?
I'll show you during the break. They block traffic using these big like cinder tubes and they call them sleeping dragons.
Okay. But what I'm saying is their mission global warming or is their mission anti-Israel, or now are all of these things kind of under the umbrella of being public pains in the asses at all times, and so everything kind of falls into it? Like, what's the mission statement?
I think it's kind of like a, not to invoke Kamala Harris, it's kind of like a Venn diagram where they all happen to fall into the same group.
A Venn diagram. I do love. You know what? That's one thing where we gave her some grief for that, her love of Venn diagrams. But over the past couple of months, I can't lie, I've also had a new appreciation for the Venn diagram. I like it because, like you said, you got a lot of groups. And then there's a little bit of a common, you know, there's the crossover.
It's a big crossover with these groups. You got
the crossover between the climate activists and the anti-Israel activists is huge. And also then you throw the LGBTQ protesters in there. That's crazy how much crossover there is with the anti-Israel protesters, only because the pro-Palestinian, pro-Gaza protesters and the LGBTQ community, something's getting lost there, because if the people in the LGBTQ community really understood how the LGBTQ community was treated in Gaza, I just don't think they'd be part of this Venn diagram. But I think that communication has been lost. Let's do the poll question here. The poll question is brought to you by Local Silver Mint, located in Ware, New Hampshire. Silver Dave will work with you directly. Contact him at localsilvermint.com. Emma, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question is, did Trump actually fall asleep in court? Yes, but who can blame him? He was just faking it. Or no, it's totally fake news.
No, I don't think there are people who can fall asleep anywhere. From everything I've read about Donald Trump over the last 10 years, and sure, a lot of it's fake news, but from everything I've read, he's not somebody who sleeps a lot. He doesn't sleep at night when most of us are snoozing. He's awake on Twitter, on Truth Social. So I just can't imagine, with all the hubbub, all the energy, all the anger and frustration he must be feeling as this judge tells him he can't go to his son's high school graduation, I don't think that's the time he takes a cat nap. I do not believe it. And I do kind of think he was faking just to mess with people.
He was just faking it in last with 9%. In first is nope, it's totally fake news with 63%. And in second, yes, but who can blame him?
All right, we will take your calls. A lot of people on the lines want to talk about Israel, these protesters. I guess it was pre-planned for a very long time to take over the country with these protests. The only place I saw these nuisances being handled appropriately was the free state of Florida. That goes without saying. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about this Department of Defense deputy when we come back.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Grace Curley Show. Thank you all so much for joining us today. I did want to comment here before we go to our guest and we take your calls on that NPR journalist. So this guy, and if I'm saying his name wrong, I do apologize. It's a pretty unique name. Uri Berliner. I just keep calling him Berliner. And he writes this story about NPR. It was a great story. I encourage everyone to read it. It was in Barry Weiss's Free Press publication and or outlet. And he wrote about some of the disasters, some of the big mistakes that NPR made in covering the Hunter Biden story. That's really where my mind goes to, just because they had sent out an email saying, here's why we're not going to cover the story on Hunter Biden, because we like to give our listeners real news. It was a joke. You know what I mean? And really, actually, it reminds me of what Katie Couric's talking about, this anti-intellectualism. Like, we know what's better for you than you do. It's just snobby, elitist behavior. And apparently, according to an NPR veteran who's been there for 25 years, that's running rampant right now at NPR. So he writes this article. And I read a lot of it on air. It was a nice way to go down memory lane of all of the mistakes that were made. And I thought to myself, wow, good on this guy. I mean, that takes kind of cojones to write that. I didn't realize that he was still employed at NPR, that he was writing. That would be like me writing a scathing piece on the Howie Carr Radio Network and then showing up the next day and being like, hey, guys, what's going on? Hey, Emma, can you pull this sound for me? It'd be awkward. I thought, wow, this is awkward. But then the more I thought about it, I was like, it's awkward, but it's kind of brilliant. Because if you're accusing NPR of not being open to different opinions, not being open to different ideas, not being open to free speech, and then you write a piece and they fire you over it, you're kind of proving your point. And so in that way, I was like, well, they can't fire him because then they're just proving his point. They suspended him. As of today, suspended for 5 days without pay. Where my mind goes to is lawsuit. Like, I think that has lawsuit written all over it. I'm not a legal beagle. I don't know. But I would hope that this guy is lawyered up and he's not going to go down without a fight. Based off what I was reading in his piece, seems like a very smart guy. I don't know if Katie Couric would agree, but I think he'll be able to handle it. 844-500-4242. Joining us now, another very, very smart man, Toby Leary. Toby, thank you. Now, Toby, we were in the green room and you brought up to me, you said something that really stuck out to you about these protesters yesterday. Share it with the audience.
Well, I just found it really interesting that it seemed like a very coordinated effort. It was and the news media didn't really pick up on that, which was surprising to me. I thought that and I mentioned it yesterday. We played some clips of this group. They call themselves like A Blue or whatever. And they had a website dedicated to A15. So April 15th, they planned this, like, you know, Day of Wonders, where they had like to protest. But specifically, they wanted to block areas of commerce, you know, so bridges, airports, weapons manufacturers were affected. You know, that was obviously a part of their plan. And I found it interesting that the stock exchange in Copenhagen, Denmark was ablaze. And like, no one's making some sort of connection there. And I'm thinking, isn't it pretty obvious, like, the group that says they want to affect financial markets and the finances of four different continents they talked about and a bunch of different countries, and not to mention all the states that we saw a constant news feed of yesterday. And so I actually trolled them a little bit on their Instagram account. And I said, oh, and they were taking credit for all the protests, all the stuff. And I said, you seem to forget about burning down the building in Copenhagen. You know, was that like just an oversight or was that intentional? I was, you know, and I haven't got a response yet. Surprise, surprise. But at the very least, I'm like, all right, this is pretty easy to figure out who's doing this and what's going on. And you go on their website and they have a legal defense fund for each region of the country and point of contact to organize a protest. And, you know, it's very well funded, well organized. You can donate. There's a nice link there to donate. You know.
And they're very transparent.
Yeah.
That's what always blows my mind about these things. And when you look at these protesters who are, I'm sorry, these crazy people, I should say, because they're not protesters. They're not activists. Like you said, they're trying to disrupt the everyone's way of life on a daily basis. But what always is surprising to me is they have these signs, death to America. Mm. They're chanting these things. You know, they're cheering on Iran. No one's trying to be sneaky anymore. Like, nobody is going about this far left radicalism in a way where in the past you had maybe people who would say, there's a leftist slant to this, or, you know, you're being anti-Semitic, or, you know, there's undertones, there's dog whistles of this, there's dog whistles of that. This group is very well organized, very choreographed, very pre-planned, and they're very honest about their mission. Mm. As opposed to in the past, we've had far left progressives who have an ideology, who have an agenda, but they mask it a little bit in, you know, euphemisms and trying to appear to be more moderate. That's no longer happening.
Right. And it's very much like the mainstreaming of like the Earth Liberation Front or the Animal Liberation Front, these echo terrorist groups that have been acknowledged for years. They set fires, they burn things to the ground, they blow things up, they, you know, whatever. And now here it is like mainstreaming for a new cause. And I heard you talking with Emma about the Venn diagram of do these groups overlap? And I would say absolutely they do. And the people that participate in them, I would venture that are, you know, professionals at this.
Yeah.
They're just told where to go and what the cause is, and they show up, they're bussed in, they're paid. Their, you know, legal defense is already, there's already an escrow account ready to bail them out of jail should they get arrested. So it's, you know, same group, different day from what I see. And they're paid, you know, I was even talking about it yesterday with Jared and basically saying, it just reminds me of that scene from Iron Man 3 where that guy was like the figurehead of this like global disruptive group, and they're showing all this stuff, and then they finally arrest the guy and he's like, oh, I'm just an actor, I'm not the guy, you know. So it was pretty funny, like, but I that's what you feel like is going on here, and it's just unbelievable. But one other little connect the dots moment is, if the Proud Boys guy can get arrested and sentenced for 20 years in jail for not being at the Capitol on January 6th and blamed for that whole thing, how about the organizers of yesterday? All the flights that were missed, all the people who may have died, all the money that was lost, all the markets that were disrupted.
Well, we won't be able to figure out who it was. You know what I mean? We don't have accurate. There's no photos. There's no way to track these people down. Merrick Garland's going to take a pass on this one.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be, you know, the same person who left the cocaine in the White House, probably.
Yes, yeah. And planted the J6 bomb. Speaking of J6, big court case being heard today, big oral arguments for the Supreme Court, Fisher versus the United States. It has to do with this obstruction statute and whether or not it's going to hold up. And depending on how the Supreme Court rules, this could change the course for a lot of these J6 defendants, hundreds of cases based off this. So we will be following that as well. Toby, I did want to ask you a story that the Mailroom Manager has been following and I've been following as well. California seeing a huge surge in gun sales. A lot of people are attributing this to a specific part of the border wall in San Diego that has just been completely porous. People are pouring over it. A lot of Chinese foreigners are coming over. And the number has increased. I think it was some outrageous number of people are able to get through that area in San Diego. And therefore, people in California in that area are saying, listen, I'm going to protect myself. I'm going to protect my property. Now there's fear that the government, because they're seeing this spike in gun sales, is going to intervene. Do you foresee that happening?
I don't know if government's going to intervene. You mean they'll intervene and shut the border? Or they'll intervene in stopping the gun sales?
They'll intervene in the gun sales, yeah. Of course. I mean, nothing's going to get them to close the border.
Well, let's put it this way. Yesterday, I saw this huge lineup in New York about, you know, to get into this building to air their grievances against the city of New York. Mayor Adams wants to make things better for the migrants there. And this was an absolute disaster. and the line for people to get in and was humongous. And if you look at it, the pictures on social media, 20 to 1 military-aged males versus like women or children.
Right.
20 to 1. Easily that was the
breakdown.
The breakdown. So you go back to California now, where the breach is actually happening in the southern border. And California is a big state, obviously. But just to give you some idea on how big they are and how much of a consumer they are, that if the approved weapons roster that they have there, like we have in Massachusetts, ever goes away, there won't be enough guns in this country temporarily to satisfy the demand for guns in that area, because that's how big the consumer market is in California.
Wow.
Glock, one of the only reasons Glock still makes the Gen 3 pistol, they're on to the Generation 5 of pistols. The only reason they make it is because of the California market, and that one model attributes to 40% of all of Glock sales. So one gun, the Gen 3 in a couple different configurations, Glock 19, Glock 17, that really is only being sold to in mass to the California market, is attributable to 40% of an entire company's sales. That just shows you how big that market is.
Now, is it specifically in that area in San Diego where the border is?
No, that's statewide. But in specifically in San Diego, people are very pro. There's a lot of pro 2A. I actually know.
There's a lot of ex-military too, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm friends with a guy who owns a shop like mine in San Diego. And there's a lot of challenges to the unconstitutional laws of California through the Southern District of California, the district court there. And there's a judge named Roger T. Benitez. He's become known affectionately to the Second Amendment community as Saint Benitez. But he has authored a lot of pro 2A rulings that have gone all the way up to the Supreme Court, where the Supreme Court has GVR'd the overturn of the Ninth. So in other words, he has a pro 2A ruling that went up to the Ninth Circuit. They overturned his decision, and then it got appealed to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court, that GVR stands for granted certiorari, vacated the lower decision and remanded it back to them to get it right. So he's had three cases that have made it all the way to the Supreme Court level, that at the same time the Bruin decision was penned, if you will, or released, they took those three cases and GVR'd them. They granted them cert, like the Supreme Court is granting them that they're going to hear the case. But instead of hearing it, they vacated the Ninth Circuit ruling and remanded it back to them to get it right in light of the Bruin decision.
So they cut out the middle ruling and then they send it back to the middle court.
Correct.
I know middle's not the correct word.
That's right.
There rolling their eyes. I get that, but you're just saying, they say, okay, middle court got it wrong. That doesn't count anymore. You got to do it again, and hopefully you'll get it right this time.
And so now...
That's my grease.
No, that's great. That's excellent. And it's easier to understand like that. And then to show how anti-gun that Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is, instead of them actually doing that and saying, all right, we've been given a clear mandate on how to rule on this, what they ended up doing was vacating Justice Benitez's rulings and sending them back to him, saying, so they just did the same thing to the lower court and said, all right, you heard the Supreme Court, I'm sending it back down to you. You got to do this all over again. So this is the slow walk. They're hoping that by slow walking these cases, they might see a change in the Supreme Court or a packing of the Supreme Court or something like that. So by the time it gets back to them, which they've already got back to them, and instead of them hearing it in the three-judge panel like they're supposed to, they said, oh no, forget that. We're going to hear this en banc, meaning the whole Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, because the first time it went to the Supreme Court, the three-judge panel upheld the lower court's ruling.
So they're thinking they have a better shot if they bring in more judges.
Well, they just don't want another pro 2A ruling to come out. So they are going to skip the three-judge, which is unprecedented. And then they're going to rule on it en banc. And of course, they're going to overturn the lower court's decision. And guess what? Then it goes back to the Supreme Court.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
When this judge, who you call Saint
Benitez,
yeah, when he writes up this ruling, I've never, I should be honest. I don't read entire rulings very often. Once in a while, if they're really juicy, I'll spend the time going through them. But for the most part, I just get a summary. But these rulings can be really long. Mm-hmm. These can be like 75 pages, depending on the judge. If I'm him and I write up this whole ruling and then they send it back to me, do it again, I'm like, okay, file save.
Right.
Ruling 2.0. And I'm just sending them back the same thing. I'm not rehashing this because he wasn't wrong. They just don't like it.
Right. And you're 100% right. But he is not that type of justice. So he actually reheard the whole case.
Oh.
And like did the deep work.
I couldn't.
Yeah. Did the deep work of pretending like it didn't happen the first time. Calling witnesses, hearing oral arguments, the whole nine yards, and then wrote a conclusion. And again, it's like a 75-page ruling and said, yeah, I kind of got it right the first time, but here's how I got it right the second time, which is going to add to the strength of my case in light of this whole Bruin decision. And by the way, he was doing the correct analysis of 2A cases before the Heller decision came out in 2008. And that was reaffirmed as good law by the Bruin ruling that came out that referenced Heller and said, yep, they got it right. The whole text of the Second Amendment is what you can look to on any 2A case. And if it's not, if there's no provision in the text for this particular law that you are trying to uphold or pass or whatever, then we can then you got the burden shifts to government to prove that there was a historical analog or laws at the time of the founding of the ratification of the Second Amendment in 1791. So he was doing that before any of them, and it was brilliant. He's a brilliant judge.
And I want to continue to talk when we come back, Toby, about something we were also discussing in the green room, which has to do with Denver and what's happening there with their Second Amendment issues. So we will come back with Toby Leary. He's got more to say. Don't go anywhere. It's the Grace Curley Show.
You're listening to the Grace Curley Show. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Listen up, everybody. Toby Leary is filling in for Howie Carr for the next 4 hours. He has an excellent show prepared for you. Toby, you're going to be talking about the Second Amendment in your show today. You're going to be talking about Denver, I'm sure. So let me just, I've been teasing this story, and I just want to get the headline out to people. This is something we hear about all the time, and it's gross. A teacher found in a car with a student. A female teacher, she's having some sort of weird affair with this young student, a 17-year-old student. But what's interesting about this story is who she's married to. She's the spouse of a deputy at the Department of Defense. The husband of the Nebraska substitute teacher who was allegedly caught naked with a teen Saturday was revealed to be a Harvard-educated deputy at the Department of Defense, the Daily Mail reported. This incident draws further attention due to her husband, William Douglas Ward, a Harvard-educated deputy at the Department of Defense, according to the Daily Mail. One thing I will say about these cases are it's unbelievable how differently these cases would be treated if the genders were reversed. And it shouldn't be, because it's disgusting and horrible either way. We'll be right back. Toby Leary coming up next. Don't go anywhere.